notes. Who is an addict? I'm an addict. My name is Helene.
Hi.
You know, it's so hard sometimes when I look around. It's just like a regular meeting. I have to remember, don't be nervous, just do service.
That's right.
Let me take a deep breath. I have a cheat sheet, of course. And, of course, I'd like to thank the committee for asking me to come and speak. It's always an honor to do service for Narcotics Anonymous. When I was asked to share about this, of course, I'm a good addict, and I go around, and I look through all the books, and I read this book, and I look through this literature and that piece and everything. And I remembered that, you know, simplicity is the key, which is, you know, our logo for this convention. And it kept bringing me back to the half sheet that most of us read at the very beginning of our meetings. And so some of the pieces that I wrote down were from that. And the first part that I wrote was, you know, most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know. You know, and when I first actually looked at the idea of addiction, I didn't know I was an addict. You know, I mean, as a kid, I think I had all the isms of addiction. I had all of the signs. I remember feeling completely outside of myself. I remember feeling that, excuse me, I had a lot of friends. I had a lot of friends. But I always felt like I was alone. And I felt like that if I slept until noon, all my friends left me at quarter of. You know, and that was a lonely feeling. And that, I think, was as far back as I can remember of those ideas of feeling outside of what was really the norm, outside of the norm. I grew up in the hippie movement and the tail end of the hippie movement. And, you know, back at that time when I was using drugs, it was fun. You know, I mean, it had to have been fun or it wouldn't have been an attraction. And for me, it was fun. And, you know, another thing I wrote, in school, I remember they had drug education. Remember that? And I remember, I mean, that was like the funnest class because we would get all the books and we could look through the books and see what kind of drugs we were using, you know? So, I mean, that was just the greatest thing for me. But what I do remember is that they said, if you use drugs, you'll be hooked the first time. And you'll be an addict. And, of course, you know, they showed pictures of what an addict looked like. And they were, you know, all the things that we thought of, you know, laying in the streets, homeless, the needles, you know, the jobless, the skinny, the, you know, the itching, the whole nine yards. So, of course, I made sure I didn't look like that. And I think that forms those opinions in our heads that, you know, well, I can't be an addict because I don't look like that. You know, eventually, I got almost there. But anyway, let me back on focus. But I had to, at one point, I had to realize that I was having fun, and at one point, it reached a time when it was no longer fun. And so, of course, I didn't call myself an addict. I said, I have a problem. I have a problem. The readings, I'm going to back and forth go through that. It says, our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another. And for me, at that time, even though I had a problem, you know, drugs were involved in everything that I did, everything. All the way from, you know, originally it was partying, going to concerts, hooking school, but eventually it was going on a job interview. The first time I got the job, the day I got fired from the job, the first day of spring, the last day of fall, the first day it snowed, I broke up with a guy, I went with a guy. It didn't matter. Drugs were involved in everything in my life. So my whole life was thinking, my whole life was centered around thinking about drugs. It also talks about the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. You know, I think that at one point I became in love with the pursuit. You know, the pursuit. It took a lot of energy to go out and cop. You know, I mean, I remember knowing someone that said that they would throw up all the way to the dope man's house even before they got high. Because, you know, you get all those feelings of the pursuit. And I became crazed with the pursuit. Later on in the readings it says, it actually says what an addict is. It says, an addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. You know, that's a hard reality, the word control. But I can tell you guys, I could be in the middle of eating dinner. And I remember many a time sitting down to dinner with whatever significant other I had at the time, with the plate, the steak, the potato, the knife, the fork, the whole nine yards, trying to live a normal life. And I would look at him and he would look at me. No words were said. We were out the door, down the road, to the dope man's house, copping. Okay? 3 days later, we come back to the house. There's the plate, the steak, the potato, the knife, the fork. You know? That's control by drugs. That's control. So at one point, I realized that I must be an addict. I even remember the last time that I used. I knew that I was going to go to treatment, and I remember saying with the two people that I was with, "I'm an addict. Did you know I was an addict? I'm an addict." You know, like somebody really wants to hear that when they're getting ready to use drugs. You know, and I'm saying, "I'm going to treatment next week." You know, but. At the time, I really just wanted to quit using one drug. One particular drug drove me to do the things that I hated the most. Other substances didn't always take me to that craziness, so of course I didn't understand the disease of addiction, and I said, "You don't understand, I just have to get off of this one drug," you know. And thank God I learned about what addiction really was. I think it also comes a time when you say that you're an addict, or for me, when I said I was an addict, it meant I had to do something about it. Because admitting it meant, you know, "Helene, this is really messed up. There's something wrong with this. There's something very wrong with putting a substance into my body and making myself do the things that I don't really want to do." So I had to do something about it. I was blessed to go away to treatment. I don't think it has to be for everybody. I think you can get clean here in Narcotics Anonymous. For me, I was able to go to treatment. And I learned about arresting the disease. Arresting. I learned how to follow suggestions. And I learned kind of like an education about addiction. And then I needed that. I needed to know what would trigger my addiction. How do I go out in the real world and live, you know, Narcotics Anonymous and sponsorship and all that. I had to learn all that. And I got that in treatment. But one of the things that happened to me shortly after I got out of treatment is that I still wasn't convinced that I was an addict. And I had to walk one more time into something that I didn't use drugs. At the time I got out of treatment, it was right after Christmas. And usually at Christmas time, I would bake cookies. And I would give cookies as Christmas gifts. And so I was late. Because it was after Christmas, and I had to make up time. So I was making cookies, and I had cookies all over the counter in the kitchen, and then I had made more and more and more cookies. So I spread them out into the living room, and I put wax paper down all over the tables and all over the sofas, and went into the bedrooms and put them all over the beds and put wax paper down there. I had cookies everywhere. And my husband at the time came home, and I had been cooking all day long. And he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm making cookies." You know, and I had that crazed look in my eye. And I was insane with baking cookies. And I realized, oh my God, I'm an addict. It's not just about the drugs. I'm off on baking cookies. And I think I needed to see that early on. So what I did at that point was I put all of my energies that I had put into copping, I put all of them into my program. You know, and they say if you just put half of what you did in the pursuit of copping into your recovery, you have a chance. I have a chance. And so I did. You know, they guaranteed me that, you know, 90 days, if you do what we say and you do everything we say, within 90 days, you're going to feel a little bit better. And I did. I did. As I started to recover and I started to, like, look inside myself, I kept thinking, you know, I hated Helene. I absolutely hated that witch that came out when she used. And so I felt a lot of shame. And I was going to meetings and I was, you know, had the sponsor and I was involved in service and everything. But I had to actually work the steps and actually get a higher power into my world in order to heal. Because drugs took me outside of myself, so I had to look and say what was so wrong with self. And the steps helped me up and out to find out how to heal the inside. I needed that inner peace. As I learned more about addiction, I learned that it was, you know, spiritual, physical, mental, obsession, compulsion. And I was able to learn how to recognize it in other areas of my life. I continued to work my program, but the one thing that I could see is that as I would get rid of one addiction, another addiction would pop up. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like I was cleaning house, and every time I turned around, this other thing would come, you know, like shopping and relationships and line dancing. And those who know me know I'm crazed about line dancing. And I wrote down this one, you know, even after 12 years clean, there are certain things that still come up in my life. And it was, I guess, 6 months ago. I was at the Walmart. And, you know, I'm stuck in the shoe aisle at Walmart. Now, not like, I mean, no offense against Walmart, but it's not like they have the greatest shoes. You know, but I'm off on an obsession. And my boyfriend is trying to find me. I hear, "Will Helene Quinn please come to the front office to meet your friend?" Now, when you have to be paged out of your obsession at Walmart, and thank God I ran up to him, I said, "Oh, thank God you paged me. I was caught in obsession. Time had gone by. I couldn't get out of that darn aisle. I was buying and trying every shoe on, you know." And I could feel, you know how you, when you're caught up in an obsession, your heart starts to race and you got tunnel vision. You're thinking, "I need more, 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 more shoes, please," you know. But the difference is that after, you know, some time, I'm able sometimes to recognize it. And so what I say now, actually when I go to Walmart, especially when I'm with my boyfriend, he says, you know, "All right, make your list, go in, get your stuff, meet me here." And I have to stay focused. Other times when I'm by myself and I have time to kill, I have to say, "Stop. Look. Listen." Mm-hmm. Run! And that's what I do. I mean, that's if I feel myself that I'm caught up in that obsession. For instance, I still go on the mad search. The mad search. I've lost a bracelet or a necklace or something. And I tear the whole house apart because I'm on the mad search. And what I remember is being down on the carpet for the mad search, looking for the one little piece that I thought I dropped, but I didn't. Mm-hmm. And that same obsession comes over me. Here I am, years down the road, looking for a stupid necklace or a bracelet, caught up in the same obsession. And my heart's racing. And I think, "Stop. Look. Listen. Run!" That's the only thing I can do. You know, and it helps me to be able to recognize that, because I'm an addict. I will get caught up in anything that takes me outside of myself, to include things that are not good for me, to include things that are good for me. You know, when I started line dancing 7 years ago, I was line dancing 5 nights a week. Now, if you're line dancing 5 nights a week, something else is missing in your life. And I came to the point where I had to realize that recovery is about balance. And when I would talk to other people that have gone back out and used, it was usually one little thing that they didn't do in their program, and that was finding some sort of balance. And so I tried to stay a little bit of this and a little bit of that and a little bit of each iota in my life so that I don't OD on any one specific portion. When I'm ODing on something, whether it's good or bad, I'm not centered. I have to stay centered. I have to stay right in the middle and keep my focus where I need it to be. The other things that also remind me that I'm an addict is insecurities. I'm too fat. I'm too old. I'm not good enough. I'm not educated enough. I don't have a big enough house. I got all these insecurities that tell me time and time again, you're a bad person. You need to come back to the dark side. Mm-hmm. It wants me. And I have to actually talk out loud sometimes to myself. I have to send, you know what else I do? I put little signs all around my house with positive subliminal messages. You know? I have to. I'm an addict. The dark side wants to creep in every chance it gets. And I have to keep the light in front of me and centered. You know, does this mean that at any given time I could go out and use just because I'm an addict? Early on, I remember seeing somebody. I had, I don't know, 4 years clean. And I saw this girl, and she and her husband had like 17, 18 years. And he used. And I went up to her and said, you know, I don't mean to pick you, but I just need to pick your brain to find out what did he not do or what did he do so I don't do it. She was very taken back by it, and she said to me, he's an addict! He used because he's an addict! You know, and I was like, whoa. I thought, you know, does that mean that at any given time, you know, when we say, I'm an addict, I could use tomorrow. Yeah, I could use tomorrow. But I remember when I came in here, they told me the promise was freedom. And if you do these things and you follow this program, you don't have to use. Mm-hmm. If I'm working a program today and I'm staying centered in where I'm supposed to be, then I'm promised that I will stay clean. I don't think I'm just going to all of a sudden go out and use. I think relapse is a process. Mm-hmm. You know, we start to slip a little bit at a time. And so I have to learn from other people what they did or what they didn't do so I don't have that happen to me. You know, I don't think that because I'm an addict that I'm doomed. I used to think that, you know, being an addict meant I was a horrible, wicked person. And today, I've dealt with a lot of the garb from my past. And I really like Helene. I really like who I ended up being. You know, it says, we are people in the continuing and progressive illness. And I do know that this is a progressive disease. I know that if I use tomorrow, it's going to be horrible. It's going to be like I never stopped. I'm going to see all my nevers. Maybe not tomorrow, but it's all going to happen. But I do know that we do recover. And I do know that the promise is still with me. And I know that the old lie, once an addict, always an addict. I like to now say that I'm an addict in recovery. Mm-hmm. I'm enjoying my life. It's a good life. And it's thanks to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, so being an addict isn't such a bad thing. I'm an addict. My name's Helene. Thanks for letting me share. Thank you,
Helene. I'd like to thank Helene for sharing. At this time, our second speaker will be Wilson.
This is my turn, huh? My name is Wilson. I'm an addict.
Hi, Wilson.
I would like to thank you also again. Give me, I need another one. I'd like to thank you. You know, I was just thinking how you initially had a real calming type of effect on me. And you know how they say sometimes somebody is a hard act to follow. I think you've made yourself a good act to follow.
Aww,
because I think the clarity of your message was clear. And hopefully, minds can be clear too. And you leave out here with some clarity and the kind of peace that you've given me to start my sharing. And hopefully you can leave out from this with that. This is my first time sharing at a workshop, so I am definitely nervous. If I had to share as soon as I walked in this room, coming up from registration, I'd been bouncing off the wall. Whew, that registration has me busy down there. All I need is a good cup of coffee to go with that. I know at my job, they tell me, on my job I work with young adolescents in a level 5 school. Kids with behavior problems, et cetera, just like me. And I coordinate a program, and every now and then I drink a cup of coffee. And they know when I drink a cup of coffee. And they tell me, Wilson, leave the coffee alone. Because I'll be off the wall. You know, I mean, it's no question. I am definitely hyperactive. And I would have had that label if when I was in school they were giving it up. But at that time they just put you in social adjustment class, and I was in that. So I can identify. But who's an addict? You know, most times my addiction can tell me that I'm not an addict. You know, they talk about most of us do not have to think twice. You know, I forgot, can I use your cheat sheet?
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me just set it up here anyway, just in case. I thought about doing one. Matter of fact, I did start one, but I forgot it. And, you know, I read the chapter a couple of times again. Then I just kind of put it down. You know, that's why, and this is how I came to speak. You know, I would like to say I would like to thank the committee for asking me to speak. Well, how long do I speak for?
You got 25 minutes.
Okay. But the committee didn't initially ask me. What happened was I always come down to Ocean City. I came in the room September 92. And for me, I think it's important that I say that because time is important. And I think that people are able to compare my time with what I share, my experience and my strength and hope, because I think it's important. Because when I came in the room and I saw people and they had gold chains and they was talking about these things they did and they just said they had a few minutes, I expected the next day I should have had the same thing or something was wrong. I didn't understand that their few minutes may have been 5, 6, 8, 10 years, and it took some time to get those things. So to me, it's kind of important. And then also, initially, and this guy said he wanted me to do this particular workshop.
There you go.
He said because he remembered when I came into meetings, I would never speak. Aww. And that's good. I guess it's all right what they say, the old timers used to say. Shut up if you knew, if you wanted to use, we asked you and all that. I don't know. But anyway, I would never get up to get a chip. Keychains in N.A. Keychains, right? We got to keep our message clear, right? But I would never get up to get one. You know, 30 days, 60 days, I'm not getting up there to get one. And people, yes, I want to be one of them. So to me, time is important. You know, time is definitely important. But I think it's more important that if I do lead a meeting, if there's someone in there 30, 60, 90 days, or maybe a year, maybe some of the things that I shared, they can compare it with the time I have and compare their story with mine in that reference. And not think, because now that I own a house, and I think that's important too. My sponsor said, share about the things that you have also, because I did not come here to do bad. Now that I have a 2000 Avalon, I did not have those things at 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, or even a couple of years. It took me almost 9 years before I've been able to accumulate those things. And I'm so glad to have them. I want them. I want to always keep those type of things. But I also have to understand that things can happen to them. And if I have a level of peace, then I will be okay. And I will hopefully keep on growing with my recovery. Who's an addict? You know, and I said one thing I was going to do, I would keep saying who's an addict and then say how my addiction used to always tell me how maybe I wasn't an addict. And I would try to flesh out my experience along with letting you know how I come to be where I am now. But, you know, I mean, they talk about the progressiveness. I know when I started in Southeast Washington when I was 10, 11, however old, drinking bumpers of Coke 45 with the guys, and like this guy shared in New York last week, and I had to remember that, or taking some old English and putting the cigarette buds in it. I wasn't an addict. I was just having a good time. That's what you do. Mm-hmm. You know, when I smoked marijuana, I wasn't no addict. I never thought that it would progress to going in and out of different penal systems, in and out of drug programs, having the opportunity to stand here today to share my experience with you guys. I knew nothing about that. You know, when I was smoking banana peelings, when I was locked up in either the Virginia system or Maryland system, I wasn't an addict. I was just doing what a person who wants to get high wants to do. When I was working in a kitchen, when I was locked up in one of the systems and drinking rum extract, it had nothing to do with my obsession to get high. I was just doing what people who use heroin for a lot of years do when they get locked up. They just get high. It had nothing to do with an addict. My first time being involved with treatment was in 71. I went to a program in Richmond called Rubicon. I don't know why, but NA was in existence then, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say this and be wrong, but I think NA started somewhere around 53, mm-hmm. because that's the year I was born, so I remember that, right? Mm-hmm. But anyway, but I was in this program in the 70s, and they didn't even talk about a 12-step program or NA. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, if you got a weekend pass, you could drink. That's how the program ran. And I was in that program for a couple of years before eventually, you know, they graduated me, moved back to Washington. Before you know it, I'm off to the races, shooting dope, doing all those things again. But I wasn't an addict. I mean, I didn't even know what an addict was. Matter of fact, when I first came into these rooms, I still wasn't an addict as far as my thinking was. My addiction told me, you are not an addict. You just get high. You may be a dope fiend. And I must, let me get this out the way, I did use crack at the end. You know, I was one of those heroin addicts that didn't want to talk about using crack at the end. That was beneath me. But that last run, I did use crack. So I got that out the way, I can move on. Drop my image, now I can move on. But I mean, you could call me a dope fiend. You could call me a junkie. You could say I was an alcoholic. You could say I was a wino. But I wasn't an addict, you know. Who's an addict? Not me. How the song goes, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. But then, you know, in that chapter, that's the reading where it says most of us do not have to ask this question twice, or however it goes, right? But when the chapter starts, it says once we have found the rooms, we do not have to ask this question twice. You know, I had to find the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I had to understand that being an addict was something that was primary and chronic. It was progressive. It was fatal, but can be arrested. I had to learn all of those things. I had to learn that addiction was a disease. And I don't know when I accepted the fact that I was an addict, because somewhere in our literature in the beginning, it also talks about we kind of enter into this thing and we kind of surrender quietly. I think I kind of surrendered before I even knew it. You know, I was just here. And how it happened for me was like this. Like I said, I've been 171048. 1178-07, 206-256, D.C. number, Virginia number, Maryland number. Remember all three so clear. The last time I had to visit the Maryland system in 89, went in the system being a good old institutionalized person that I am, I knew how to program. So I had them put me on the drug unit. I'm going to program, see if I can get the judge to put me in the program again. Make a long story short, was on that unit, they used to bring meetings in. And this is where I was exposed to meetings a few years back when I had to go into VA hospital for bacteria, endocarditis, and all of those things that went along with you people who knew that you were addicts. But only I just did it because I just happened to use drugs, not that I was an addict. My addiction would not allow me to know that I was an addict, because if so, maybe I would have found these rooms sooner. But anyway, after being on that unit and they were bringing meetings in, judge didn't want to hear it, but the judge said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm giving you 9 years. I know they won't give you parole. I'm going to bring you back in 3 years and let's have a reconsideration. Went down the road, didn't go to no meetings down there, went and enrolled in school, did what I always did. Because see, I wasn't an addict. So I didn't know that I had a disease that needed to be addressed through understanding, you know, the steps and the readings and maybe getting sponsorships, because you can do that even in institutions. I didn't know about H&I. Well, I knew about it because they were bringing the meetings in jail, but I didn't really pay attention. I just went because I was waiting on my court date. But when I went down the road, all that was gone to the side, just like always. I programmed. I went back to college in the institution, got a good old smooth job, And that's what I thought I had to do to get myself together. Like always, once I got locked up, I'll get it together. I'm not going to live that way anymore. I'm tired of taking my mother bad. I'm tired of being on the street greasy as a pork chop, or leaving 14th Street in the morning to go downtown and hustle, and people moving away from me because they're smelling somebody so bad. I always was tired of those things when I was arrested, you know, but as we say, rescued. But I didn't know that it was a disease that I had because I was not an addict. At least my disease of addiction told me I am not an addict. Who's an addict? Maybe you were. I was not an addict. At least my disease said this. So every time I went to an institution, I just tried to improve myself educationally. I used to fantasize about what I was going to do when I got out to work with young people and help others not live the life I lived. But of course that never happened because I didn't know about this disease, who was an addict, because my addiction said, not you. You're just a junkie. And you have went on and what's the word I'm looking for? You have just said your life, that's what you're going to be. Mm-hmm. You accepted the fact that you were going to be a dope fiend. Mm-hmm. So, but make a long story short, once I went down to the institution, did that, of course, I institutionalized. I do great. Going to college, no write-ups, went back to court, tried to get in Second Genesis. They had no room. Judge said, you know what? Tell you what I'm going to do. He said, this is against my better judgment, and I know when I put you out there, you are going to come back, and you're going to probably get life for papers. So I'm just going to cut you loose. I'm going to give you probation and let you go. My man, I was all right. Mm-hmm. Because once again, mm-hmm. I've been down for 3 years, have not been using. I got this thing together this time. Forgetting all of the other times that I had it together, but I ended up going right back uptown, and I was sick before I even got uptown to get my dope. And I was already ill, just like I had been used the progression. Mm-hmm. Kicked right back up no sooner I hit the street. I forgot all of those things because who's an addict? My addiction said, not me. So, got out, did what I always did. But it's kind of hard to say, but you're right. I went and got some crack. I didn't get any heroin. I hate to tell y'all about the crack thing, you know, because, you know, for a heroin addict, that was beneath us, you know. I mean, you know, we were real street hustlers. We go hard, you know, hit us with a baseball bat or whatever, but, you know, went and got me some crack, went and got a young lady, went and got something to drink, and that was pretty much that day. Third day, did the exact same thing. Now, of course, although I'm not an addict, I still didn't have no place to stay, so I was still living in my mother's one-bedroom apartment, sleeping on her couch. The third day, now hopefully I'll get to touch this because this is extremely important to me about my mother. But the third day, I turned to my mother. I said, Mom, I need some money. Now, I'm an only child now. And maybe you'll understand this later. And she looked at me, and she just turned like this, and like her whole back just slumped over, and she walked away. Right then, today, I know that was my higher power intervening in my life, giving me a moment of clarity. Because the very first thought that came to my mind was, call some of them guys that brought those meetings in the jail before you went down the road. Where did a thought like that come to me from? My only thought was, forget it. Go out there and take something. Go find her pocketbook and take it if she won't give it to you. The very first thought was, call one of those guys that brought the meeting to the jail. The next thought, you threw all the numbers away when the judge gave you the time. Right after that, and I truly know, now I am not a mystical, I do not go to church. I am a spiritual person, I believe. But, you know, I'm just trying to let you know, I'm not a holy roller type of guy. But right after that, but I know it has to be a higher power. Because my thinking does not go like this. And if I remember, I'm telling you these stories, this guy said New York was real funny, I like that. The next thought was, call an NA hotline. And this is the honest to God truth. At least I do not recall consciously anybody ever telling me anything about an NA hotline. But for whatever reason, that was the thought that came to my mind. Picked up the phone. This was a Saturday. Called the NA hotline. Said, I want to do something different. I need some help. They said, don't move. Don't you move. Stayed in the house. I don't know, hour passed, whatever. I think I may have about 50, 60 cents. I found some change. Nobody came. I'm heading out the door to the liquor store. I got enough to get a drink. You know, I'm geeking. Jeez, I hate to say that word. So I'm heading across the street to get me something to drink. And nobody came by now. Of course, I don't have no faith in anything. So as I'm going out the door, see, high power know who's to send to you. A green Mercedes pulled around the corner. As a matter of fact, this brother I had working on registration this morning, we was talking about it. A green Mercedes pulled around the corner. I stopped and turned around. I said, that may be me. So I go over there, but it's the person that was coming to pick me up, this guy and his wife, right? And so I get in the car, we're heading on to a meeting. You know, I'm sitting back in a Mercedes, you know what I mean? Dope fan for 20 years. I always thought he could be a hustler, you know, get about $50, maybe flip it, you know, 10 minutes, then I got to go out and try to take something. Never sell dope all my life. I'm sitting back in the Mercedes, and I said, look, man, you look familiar. But anyway, make a long story short. I got a long story, so I'm making short answer. I find out he had some people that was kind of hopped in the dope game at one time, right? So, you know, I'm kicking it. High power know who to send to you. You know, so my thinking is telling me, okay, once he finds out that I'm okay, that I just got out of the penitentiary, and I do my time when I fall, they're going to hook me up. They're going to hook me up, so I'm laying back. You know, I'm kicking it with them. You know, and I'm talking to them, but where your people at? Get in Denver. When they coming home? You know, so I'm just, be cool, Wilson. Don't ask too many questions. Just he'll know you all right in a few days, week time. You're going to be all right, sitting back in the Mercedes. So we went to a meeting. Next thing you know, he took me to a couple meetings, and he took me to a meeting that night, turned me over to another brother that lived close to me, right? And that brother said, you know what? I'm not going to give you my number. You give me your number. Because who's an addict? I want an addict, so I ain't going to call him. You know, at least that's what the disease was working hard now. Mm-hmm. Because the disease knew that something might be getting ready to happen. They might be getting ready to lose one. They didn't maybe know how long, but at least for a while. Because we say our disease keeps doing push-ups, and I believe that. Because mm-hmm. mine's checked in with me quite often. You know, but he turned me over to another brother and turned me over. And that's what got me started in this process. You know, and it's, man, it's when the more I think about it, you know, I can become overwhelmed. But you know what? A lot of times, especially now, you know, things have been fantastic for me. You know, talk about my mother real quick. I got to talk about mom. That's my gal. You know, I mean, I carried this woman bad for so long. And I'm blessed. I guess, like people tell me, my higher power knew that she needed to be with me for a while. Because I just don't know when that day comes. I just don't know. I'm still self-centered in that area. Take me first. Let her deal with the feelings. But I'm telling you, I don't think I can hang. But I just carried this woman so bad. And we know. I mean, I don't have to go into any real specifics. Because who's an addict really knows.
That's right.
How we take family and anybody else. And like this other brother said up this meeting Friday, I mean, up New York, and I agree with it. I'm a punk. Family comes first. I take them bad before I go out in the street and try to run up in them stores or take anybody's dope or anything. Family always. Like I said, I know they ain't going to come chase me with a bat. I know they won't lock me up. You know, they may lock me out of the house. Tell me I can't stay there no more. They may cry. My mom used to cry so much. Please get some help. You know, you need help, but I mean, I used to carry her so bad. And one time I carried her, you know, she, a big enabler, man. And I have to kind of, I still allow her to enable me. I got to be honest about that. She lives with me now, but no, we live together. Because even though the house is in my name, she helps pay some things. I got to be honest about
that's
that.
That's right, that's right.
But and she still enables me a lot. But, you know, she used to enable me to the point to take me to get high. I'll be sick, try to, you know, who's an addict? I was an addict. I only used. And every now and then when I didn't use, I used to get sick. But that didn't tell me that I had a progressive and a chronic illness. Mm-hmm. That just said that's what happens when you use. But she used to take me to get my dope sometime. And one time coming out, she had a heart attack. So as the ambulance took her, I took the credit cards. and a bank card. By the time she came home, I had ran through everything that woman had. She had to go to social services to, you know, get things. About a year ago, matter of fact, I didn't come to this convention last year because I was at home with her. I had to take her to the doctor, and they had to rush her to the hospital. She had another heart attack. The first one was kind of like a stroke. But this one, she needed to have triple bypass surgery, right? And that was, that was a rough time. Mm-hmm. That was extremely rough time. And through that whole process, after bringing her out about 6 hours, they told me, don't go nowhere. They didn't think she was going to make it. And I had to sign for her to go back in and et cetera, et cetera. So we kind of, it was up and down for a good little while there, right? She pulled through, right? And they didn't think she was going to pull through as fast as she did. And so at first she couldn't talk because she had all this stuff in her for a while. She was talking for days. Was always trying to feel right at hand. Couldn't figure out what she was saying. Then about 3 days later, one of my godmother, I think I hear what she's saying. So what's she saying? She said, and then she's able to talk a little more. She said, where my pocketbook? Right. This was after about 7 years clean. But you know, it's like God gave me that same experience again, right? To be there for her and to have been there for her clean, it was I'm so grateful that I had that opportunity to be there for her. And everybody told her, don't worry, he's taking care of everything. He's taking care of your social security checks and, you know, so all that was in order. And this has only come about by learning that I am an addict. It's okay. If I could do it over, I don't want to be an addict. I can't change any of that. I'm grateful that I've gotten to this point with my addiction and that I know that I have a chronic illness. It's primary, which tells me, like they told me early on, my recovery and my addiction, all those things must come first. They told me that regardless of everybody else, that had to come first. If I wasn't clean, I would never have been there. And if I survived and she died, would I have been able to deal with that? I doubt it. But I don't know. But anyway, I'm glad I was able to be there clean for it. It tells me that it's progressive. Like she said, I didn't really get in there. I have so many other issues. No. I have one major issue that overwhelms me. I'm not going to talk about it or mention it, but what I will say is I have a character defect, shortcoming, whatever, that overwhelms me so much. I've gone to outside help. I'm in a therapy trying to get help for, because I do not want to relapse. I have not relapsed, for those that haven't. For those that just came here to know that you don't have to. You know, I go to meetings, I do step work, I have a sponsor, I pray, I do all those things. They tell me it's progressive. And they say, but it can be arrested. Mm-hmm. We start with not picking up. I did not understand it for a while. Like that first chapter in there, not the reading that we're doing here, but that chapter says, after coming to the program, well, how is it worded? Whoever knows, but read again. It says something. It's a sentence in it, trust me. There's a sentence before we do not have to think twice. There's a sentence that says, after we have found the program. It's like church. They say, after you have found Jesus, you just don't find Jesus. You go to church for a while, you read literature, or a Jehovah's Witness come to your house for a couple weeks, banging on your door on Saturday. Then after a while, you find them. Then you say, hey, this is okay. You know, y'all had to show me, because my thinking, I did not believe. You could not convince me that I could not use for even one day. You couldn't convince me of that. But I sat still long enough to get my own time, to get 10 days, 15 days, 30 days. And I started to believe what y'all were telling me. That, yeah, this stuff is true. If I don't pick up, I can't get high. And it'll get better. And my main issue at first, but you got to talk to somebody. And I tell people this initially. I want to say I sponsor. I don't sponsor nobody, but this is my guy, right? And I don't really sponsor him. We grew up together, so he just say I'm his sponsor. Maybe one day somebody's going to ask me for a sponsor to sponsor them. Then I'm going to really be mad, right? Because I hear people talking about, then you really got to work, and people be driving me crazy. I like it, don't nobody call me. Only my buddies, so we sponsor each other, right? But anyway, what was I saying? See, my mind jumps like that. But I was getting ready to say something. What was I getting ready to say? Help me.
You were talking about the book.
The book. The book.
The reading.
The reading.
Sentence just before.
No, I said a sentence, but it was one last thing, and this was so important. But you know what?
Sponsorship.
No, some before sponsorship, but it's okay. It's okay today. I'm going to leave here without saying whatever it is. I'm going to think about it later. But by being around here for a while, I know it's okay. I don't have to beat myself up about it. And I thank y'all for allowing me to share.
That is wonderful.
I'd
like to thank both of the speakers for speaking. Okay. Okay. At this time, before we open the meeting up to those who would like to share, please remember to come up to the microphone one at a time. Also, try to keep in mind that there are other addicts who are waiting to share. If you don't want to be recorded, please inform the person taping so they can turn off the recorder while you are sharing. At this time, is there anyone who would like to come up and share? Okay, the floor is now open. Would you like to come up and share? Come on.
Hi, I'm David. I'm an addict.
Hi, David.
And I can't catch myself. And I was 6 years old and in trouble, and I can't explain the trouble I was in, and I was the fourth child, and that's people mention that they're fourth child, but I don't understand it. And 7 years later, another child was born. And in the first grade in Catholic school, my mother drives me to the school, and I don't want to leave her. And I hold on, and she walks over to the teacher and says, "Take David." And that was the explosion. You know, I was in trouble every year. I was expelled from third grade. And I don't know how I hit a teacher, and that was only wounding me up. I was in trouble since sixth grade until 12th grade. I was drinking, but I don't think it was a drug, but my parents were alcoholics. Now, I'm not saying that they're alcoholic. They drink every day. And I don't know what happened for me. My brothers and sisters were angels, but I was the black sheep in this family. And 12th grade, I was arrested and started smoking pot. That was a drug. Alcohol, I didn't think was a drug. And 14 years old, I was arrested for breaking into a bank. And by 16, I was a semi-dealer selling pot, speed, acid, and I found PCP, and by 18. Well, I was arrested 16, and I was only caught for some of the things, and I got away with everything, I thought. 18 years old, I moved out, and my first job was an iron worker, and every day I smoked pot, PCP, downs. I was running away from myself. I thought it was drugs was covering it up, but it didn't. For 3 years, I met professionals, thieves, that taught me how to do it. And they're standing back, and I'm doing everything. And I got busted. Three brothers. One brother snitched on the other brother and me. The second brother snitched on me and the third brother. And I went to jail. And I thought I was getting away with everything, but I was only tricking. I mean, I was only running away from myself faster. And when I got out of jail, I was a dealer. I'd go to Mexico and got pounds of pot. I didn't get caught for smuggling. I paid somebody to smuggle. And Florida, cocaine. I didn't get caught. They got caught 5 years later. And PCP, I didn't get caught. I don't know how I didn't get caught. Because I thought I was smarter than cops. They searched my house twice, and they didn't find anything. Well, I smuggled in the neighbor's yard in the woods, dig a hole, and bury it. Well, I was shot 3 times. I'm a semi-mountain climber, I saw. I'm a semi-mountain climber. I fall 60 feet. My motorcycle, somebody cuts me off 40 miles an hour. I run into him, and I was thrown 120 feet. And my recent accident, I'm an iron worker, and I fall and landed on my head. And the doctor said 2 hours to live. But when I first started this program, 4 years and 7 months ago, I was chasing clean time twice as much as I'm getting drugs. And I 90 meetings in 90 days, 90 meetings are not enough. I take 242 meetings in 90 days. And in 90 days, I am volunteering for going to jail. It's a little detention center, 13 to 17. And I was always there. And my horrible story, I explained it, and they're always, I give them my number and I talk to them. And I'm a volunteering at Shock Trauma and Shepherd Pratt. And if I keep it all inside, I'll be my worst nightmare. Because I have the right to talk about it. and I have the right to say how better I am than those years. And if you hold it inside, you're looking at a worse enemy if you don't talk about it. And that's why I am able to talk about my horrible story, past. But I am volunteering at Shock Trauma and talk to people, and I'm volunteering at Shock Trauma because I know I was in a coma for 3 months. I can understand that accident. Nobody can, but the people that have experienced it. And that is good for me. And that's the final thing I'm going to say. Thank you.
My name's Keith, and I am an addict.
Hi, Keith.
And it's good to be out here today. I heard a lot of good information. You know, this is a person you're looking at that really. I kind of knew I had a problem with drugs. And it was the other fellowship I really didn't have. And then I learned that that was also a drug. So my, you know, mainly saying that, I heard something that way back, that 1985 when I had a sit-down bout in a mental institution, which in Washington, D.C. is called St. Elizabeth's, and I was like smoking PCP. And, you know, I wanted to kill myself and didn't know how to kill myself. I mean, I'm a product of your early 60s that used pretty much everything that you possibly could have. And in the beginning, I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought it was like a recreational thing or something I would do in rebellion, you know. My parents didn't know. But, I came to believe really at a point that it took me almost another 15 years before I actually entered the rooms, Narcotics Anonymous, that I knew that I was whipped and hopeless. You know, and it came in the form of me standing in front of a judge 2 times in a row. But prior to that, losing my dad, and when I found him, I saw him in a kneeling, praying position, and I thought he was praying, but he had passed. And I went and I did the CPR, and I called that. But then after all that was over, I went downstairs and did what I like to do best, and that was shoot dope and drink liquor. And after that, I went to jail 2 years in a row. And both times, this judge would ask me, he would say, is there anything you have to say? And that was after him giving me a substantial amount of months. And it was only for, and not to say only, because you get locked up for anything. It was just a belligerent act of just being arrogant and refusing to go to court. They call it contempt of court. But for some reason, I missed it one time, and he said, well, he's going to show me. He gave me like 9 months the first time, and then he gave me a year the next time. So I really actually, and I was totally in the progressiveness of my disease at that time. And just using, trying to find ways and means to get more. You know, I would be a punk and take from my parents, my family, and friends. Because really I thought I had marketable skills. I could work on cars and I could do minor labor and other general things and tasks to get money. But I would just get the money to get high. And what had happened is judge kept asking me this question 2 years in a row. Second year I heard it. And I got real frightened because, the jail experience, even at that short time, at the age of 44, I really didn't know nothing about jail. It was just by God's grace that he put people that I knew in that jail that knew me, and they showed me how to live in jail, you know. And they gave me a way to get around all the things that would get me in trouble, you know. Don't tell them how much time you got. Don't ask no questions. Mind your business. You see something, go the other way, you know. And it, for a person like me, kind of frightened, not being in there, it wasn't no point I wanted to try to pretend I was something that I didn't know, have any idea of. I just took their suggestion. That was the first time that really the program came into the institution and I heard something. But I got out, it didn't stop there. And that was in 96. I got out in 96 and I proceeded to do the same thing I always did, you know. I got sick, like my friend was saying. before I used. And as soon as I got home, I used. I picked up. It started all over. I know at that time, for me, it was a real unwilling act on my part. I really didn't want to get high. But this is what I did, you know. They say, who's the addict? You know, that time, no information. And in the state of denial, I was, and I would never say I was an addict, you know. Always, with no information, compared myself out. I'm not as bad as them, you know. But I used every day. What had happened, this gentleman sitting here, short time, okay. Well, this gentleman says he's not like wanting to be my sponsor, which he is my sponsor, because he's given me a lot of helpful suggestions and ideas and guidance through this thing, just by communicating. Something a guy brought up in a family of four ladies, the only guy. I never won a battle in the house, and I always got a double portion of being whipped, you know, by mom and dad, you know, and the girls was always right. You know, once I got out and got on my own, I kind of, you know, was that self-willed or self-centered, you know, self-reliant person that I found out that I need people in my life. I know I got a short time, and that's what this is all about. You know, I'm an addict because that's one of the humblest things I ever could say when I came in here. And today, I say it out of really a grateful heart, you know, that people in my life today, and at a day at a time, that I've been able to establish 3 years uninterrupted. And I'm going to close with this, man. If ain't nobody told you love today, God loves you, I love you, there ain't nothing we can do about it. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Thanks.